Enveloped by crashing waves and plummeting brand value, the NRL has played its last card in the pack. It has launched Rugby League Season 2019 as a new era, yet the game has extinction written all over it. Lurid sex tapes, Cameron Smith refusing to retire, the Roosters as premiers. It's truly sickening. But history tells us that rugby league has always been able to crawl back out of the primordial slime of its own making if someone utters two magic words, fire up and Shazam, and all would be right with the greatest game of all. Well, no longer. The game has been blasted back to the Stone Age, and the two brontosauri that are Stephen Ferris and Chris Gayle can't do anything about it. So welcome to New Fire Up, the new Coke of Rugby League Radio. Welcome to a Fire Up involving 33% less talk, 33% less music, and 67% less comedy. Welcome to a Fire Up that has the go forward of the Adelaide Rams. Welcome to New Fire Up, the Jurassic Era.
Chris, I take issue with that intro. It just dawned on me, they call us Brontosauri.
Well, Stephen, I mean, I felt that you and I were both examples of a bygone era of rugby league out there at the Sydney Cricket Ground yesterday. I didn't see many young people out there, Stephen.
It was
no
dying
one relating to the game at the old girl, the SCG.
There's a dying breed that remembers going there back in the heyday of the SCG back in the 60s when, dare I suggest, Chris, there was a team that won 11 premierships in a row.
You used to be match of the day all of the time, didn't you, Stephen?
No longer.
Yeah, but there were Ankylosauruses, Diplodocuses, Tyrannosaurus Rexes, and my old favourite, the Stegosaurus. They're all out
the
there.
The Stegosaurus. What colours are the Stegosaurus, Chris?
Well, great. A little bit like the remodeled West Tigers, courtesy of Barry O'Farrell.
Yes, that's right. And look, as courtesy for this great event where the great dinosaurs came together for conflict, there was plants put in there. There were gamekeepers with tasers, you know, just to keep them under control.
Well,
I think
they were
joked, actually.
Getting into the ground was a little bit like that, wasn't it?
Let's talk about the experience, shall we, Chris? Getting into the ground yesterday, it is one of the... Well, it is the great game in the regular season outside of finals and State of Origin. You'd have to admit that close to 40,000 people turn up, public holiday, Anzac. The vets are let in for free. We expect a big moment or many moments on the day. And let's just, I reckon, tic-tac experience as we enter and we travel through this incredible day in the rugby league calendar. A perfect day in Sydney, correct?
It was a picture-perfect day, Stephen. Mm. Absolutely wonderful. I'd bought a ticket, of course.
Of course.
Yeah.
You're a man who believes in putting your money where your beliefs are, even though you follow neither team, which is commendable of you.
That's all right. I sort of worshipping the code rather than...
Yes.
Rather than colours.
And the event.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, paying my respects. It is my Anzac Day service.
The altar of rugby league, yes.
Yeah, I admit I don't get up at dawn.
No, sleep in. But then you take the car in and you look for a park.
Yes.
And what happens?
Well, the car park was full, Stephen.
Full, of course.
This was my own fault because I was intending to go see Avengers Endgame afterwards, which really restricted me to the EQ car park because all the other precincts get locked up at a certain time. So I had to, and I thought at 2:30 because the gates only opened at 2:30.
Now, whose home ground was it yesterday?
Oh, I think it was the Sydney Roosters.
Sydney Roosters. Yeah. And the game is roughly 4 o'clock as advertised. Maybe it's a little late. And in perfect management capabilities of Nick Politis, they opened the gates, what, an hour and a bit beforehand?
Pretty much.
For 40,000 people to get in.
That's
into
right.
The precinct and in the... And I'll give you my experience. I park the car in Surry Hills, walk over the Tibby Cotter, which is a glorious experience, Chris.
Take you happy about, with that? Do you think that's added something?
Extra 20 minutes of glorious sunshine, you know. Smell the breeze, see the people, hello,
it's extra
hello.
Exercise, isn't it?
It is.
They're
actually
certainly not getting the most direct route there.
It's a half a kilometre, Chris, extra, I believe. And then by the time we get there, we go, who's standing in that queue over there, which is about literally half a kilometre long?
To be honest, I thought it was Dragons fans reading the writing on the wall and they were queuing for the buses to leave the ground before the kickoff. But it turned out not to be the case.
You're a troublemaker, aren't you, Chris? Yeah. No, as it turns out, is there's a system where most people who are SCG members come for the cricket. They rarely come for the rugby league or anything else. But then on this particular day, generally those people, particularly from the eastern suburbs, go, well, look, I'd like to use my granddad's pass to get into the members for free, you know.
Right.
So suddenly there's this influx and there are more tickets than there are seats available. And so you get this onslaught of, you know, freebies, members, and it trailed all the way past the ponds.
It really did. It was extending up to Moore Park Road and it really confused me. And then, of course, in order to get to my paid ticket entrance because I paid money to go see the game, so... Mm. You know, or something, you may not. When was the last time you actually bought a ticket to a game, Steve?
Oh, I bought my membership to the Cogra Oval.
Oh, okay.
Wynn Net Strata, whatever it's called now.
And there comes a point where in Driver Avenue, you had to get to where I was going, and the security actually had to pause the members' queue to allow the great unwashed
to
to continue through. And it was like a scene out of Gangs of New York. The two crowds of people, the paying. Yeah. Punters, the general customers, yeah. And then
the riffraff.
Yeah, then the SCG members, the elite, eyeing each other off. Very uncomfortable.
Pastel coloured shirts with collars, you know. Occasional team colouring.
That's right. They've all got collars and they've got those sort of Tony Greggs style hats, you know. Yeah.
You might have seen the, and I don't know many, many little baby deer that come in fuchsia, you know, lavender or pink, but there are many little loafers that made from baby deer entering into that said section.
Is that right?
That is exactly right. Bought in Double Bay in the precinct.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, it's for once it's great to see the elite sort of
having
make
to
the
work
weight.
For their living.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Their freebies. So, anyway, we were given the detour. They said, look, this will take you probably half a day to get in here, and we could hear the bugle warming up, you know, for the last post. So they said, why don't you just walk up Moore Park Road to the Olympic Hotel.
More exercise.
Exactly. Cut down the side exit. Enter and then go past what is now really Beirut by Paddington, which is the destruction of Allianz Stadium.
Oh, it's like a moonscape there
you
now.
You get a glorious view there of this.
Isn't that a metaphor for what's happening in society right now?
Absolutely.
It's fantastic. Yes. I like that.
And then up four levels to nosebleed section because by that stage it was completely full. So we did have to work for our freebies, Chris.
And were you one of those people who sort of basically turned up at 4:45 expecting to walk straight in?
No, I turned up at 3:00, couldn't get in. Yeah. So we get in there and don't start me on the entertainment, Chris.
What entertainment, sir?
Well, I understand events and entertainment. I've had a fair experience at this sort of caper, and I'm talking as a fan here, as a member of the public going to see the occasion. And I remember going to this game, this particular game on Anzac Day, when they first started to introduce the spectacle, which was the merging of the armed forces with rugby league as a celebration of Anzac Day and our grandfathers and great-grandfathers, etc., grandmothers, aunties, etc., who had been to war, any war, and were given free tickets to the game.
Right.
And then, of course, respects due to those that gave their lives or were injured in war, etc., etc.
And we're talking Army, Navy and Air Force.
Exactly.
So all those arms of the military would be on full display at the game with all the appropriate pageantry, pomp and circumstance.
Even Papua New Guinea were always celebrated.
Correct.
The Fuzzy Wuzzies were trailed around the oval.
Beautiful moment.
Beautiful moment. Of course, the New Zealanders, the Australians were celebrated. The national anthems were played. The marching band came out. The men on horses with flags, big flags, etc. The whole, you know, pageantry was on display. Beautiful yesterday. But the armed forces, of course, this is serious business. When you go to war, Chris, artillery is used, weapons are used, bombs are dropped, planes are flown. It is serious business. And in the old days, when this game was celebrated, they, of course, like when you go to the Easter show and you want to see the fruit on display and the wheat, you see it on display.
Right.
You see the rabbits and the lambs and the chickens. When the war comes out to show what they've got, their wares, we used to get the parachute coming down.
I see what you're saying. If you go to the pig pavilion, you see a pig.
You see a pig.
Right.
You know, and you get to pat them and all this and go, oh, that could be on my plate one day. You know, you get to see the Riverina's oranges, you know, in a beautiful motif, you know.
And you'd always have your own opinion as to whether what came first, second or third, whether you agreed with it or not.
Exactly.
And you never understood, was it the quality of the display or the quality of the produce or both?
Or both, yeah. And somehow it never rotted, as you remember, you know. It's out there for like 2 weeks or whatever the Easter show ran for. So we're expecting the Army, the Navy, the Air Force to deliver. So the Air Force used to drop their parachutes, and sometimes they have some smoke trailing behind and give this sort of semblance of wartime. You would have, you know, yesterday they brought out some guns, and all they did was put out a bit of firework material. You might have noticed that yesterday.
Well, they had some sort of race, didn't they? The two teams trying to pull one of these big artillery guns and the camera person stumbled and fell over, and that was pretty much the excitement of the day. That was about the best thing of the show. I know that they were intended to have parachutes, but apparently there was a training mishap during the week and the parachute had ended up colliding with the ladies' stand. So they said, we will not introduce the parachutists if the weather conditions are not favourable.
Very favourable.
It was very favourable. Very clear skies. A breath of wind.
But Chris, if you're in Normandy and it's pitch black, right, and there's a storm blowing coming from the North Atlantic Sea and you've got to drop your troops over enemy line, you expect to be able to handle that, don't you?
You still drop them.
Yeah, you don't stop just because it's bad weather.
War is not just fought in perfect conditions, Stephen.
It is not, Chris, no.
And if our military is saying that yesterday was not suitable to drop their parachutes,
there's something very
wrong. Something's coming apart at the seams.
Right, who's the minister?
Well, it's Defence Minister Maurice Payne. I know they're in
Bruce Payne. Yes.
I know they're in caretaker mode at the moment. But I mean, you haven't even touched on your your totem.
No, okay. And apart from the parachuters, right? We used to get, once upon a time there was a couple of flyovers. You know, there used to be the F-111s or the 83s or whatever they had.
Jets go screaming over and look up.
Whoa! I feel safer.
I'm less concerned about Indonesia now.
Now I know the Navy don't really get much of a trot in this whole caper. You know,
difficult.
It is difficult.
But you'd get some sailors marching at least.
Yeah.
You know, in the hats and the what have you.
Exactly. Nothing from the Navy, and to top it all off, when they brought the Black Hawk helicopter, Chris, many years ago, I used to live in Darlinghurst, and you could hear the Black Hawks coming because they used to bring them into Paddington, I think, and just position them there, warm them up, get the big rotors revving. You could feel it. It would shake Darlinghurst, you know, let alone what it would do to the Sydney Football Stadium when they'd come down with the trophy intact and out would jump Johnsy or whoever with it wouldn't be Johnsy, of course. It'd be, you know, Ben Hornby, you know.
I think yesterday it was Minicello and Kezzy Apps.
Well, they scale it down to suddenly one day we noticed, oh, there's no Black Hawk today. Wonder what we got. Oh, it's the Channel 9 helicopter, which is, like, you know, a veritable mosquito of a helicopter. It's a pissy little thing.
It's not going to be deployed in any military theater, that's for sure.
You're not going to see the Channel 9 out at Afghanistan or something, you know what I mean? What did we get yesterday, Chris?
Nothing. And, you know, is Defence Minister Maurice Payne deliberately scaling back on what we're seeing for some reason?
I see what you're getting to here. We're in standby mode both in government and also in stadia.
Yeah, in stadia world, we're in temporary digs.
Temporary digs.
SCG, because as you can see by the crumbling edifice next door, formerly known as Allianz Stadium, there is from that particular set of ashes will rise a new, dare I say, Dark Phoenix, referring to the upcoming X-Men franchise.
Dark Phoenix.
And that is the rebuild, and I assume it's going to be called Allianz. They wouldn't want to get off that tremendous run they've been having.
They've had a pretty good run, haven't
they? It's pretty good publicity,
isn't
it?
Yes, absolutely.
And, like, the former minister for Stadia,
yes,
I think now does events, is your guy.
Stuart Ayres.
Stuart Ayres. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's a public knowledge that Maurice and Stuart are partners.
Public information, yes.
They figured in the Daily Telegraph Power 100.
Right, and Stuart does understand big events.
That's right.
Yes.
And one would wonder if we're trying to make the experience of the SCG a little bit miserable, a little bit low budget, because when Allianz launches Anzac Day in a few years' time...
Yes. The grand new girl. Like, we're talking Bank West now. The grand new girl will open up, right? And you're suggesting that Stuart and Maurice have come together with a plan. They've hatched a plan.
Well, you know, politically, they want this to launch positively.
Big.
Right?
Yeah.
So I imagine that there'll be a full 3D, if not 4D, recreation of a theatre of war, i.e. Gallipoli.
We can even flood the joint. You know, like years ago we had the hail come
Tornado.
Down. Part the seas, Chris. The players come out through the seas party. What do
that
you
would be magnificent.
I know it's not Easter, but it's close enough.
Yeah, and I think every punter would be suitably attired.
Attired. The Brontosaurus would be wheeled out.
That's right. You'd all be issued with flak jackets and helmets and whatever. You would be part of the action.
So you're given your own flak jacket and your helmet as you walk through the gates.
That's right.
Wow. Choose your colours.
If there's one way to appreciate what it's like to be in a war, is to experience what it's like in war. And with all the LED screens and 3Ds, you seem to be vibrating with every grenade. You'd hear every bullet. Because my biggest gripe about the SCG, Steve, I can't hear the whistle. Referee Cummins blew his whistle in perfectly justified circumstances, i.e. the St. George Ford pass, that's not a try.
Do you want to backpedal just a moment? We'll get onto that in a little while, shall we? And so what you're suggesting is this new stadium will have perfect acoustics, not unlike Bank West, which we'll get to later, the brand new stadium at Parramatta. So you'll hear the Brontosaurus. You know, you'll hear the waters parting.
Yes.
The bullets will fly past your head. You'll hear it. You know. What else, Chris? There'll be explosions. Black Hawk coming in. Maybe two, if it's big enough.
Well,
parachuters.
Is it a fleet of helicopters?
Fleet of helicopters.
There'll be flyover. People rappelling down, not just from the helicopters, but from the actual roofs of the stadia into seats next to you.
Yeah, and then out of the corner of your eye, you'll see some bloke running across the field, and it'll be what we will say is a replica of Hitler in rooster's colours, running across the field, being chased by somebody in red and white, right? How about that?
Well, I think that's a step too far. That sounds like a scene out of that old movie Listomania I was watching the other day. But don't mention
the skull here, all right?
the red skull. Well, there you go. That's tying everything together.
I know.
But Stuart, as is now the Minister for Events, you're involved in a big event called Vivid that sort of starts approximately this time.
A few weeks away.
Could this be in the future the launch of the Vivid Festival?
Meetings will be had, Chris.
That will be amazing.
Meetings will be had. So when the stadium opens up, Vivid starts at Anzac Day, right?
Unbelievable.
And moves onwards from there with the grand opening.
Well, it'll be better than what was served up yesterday, Stephen.
Oh, man, but you're not talking about the game, of course, because that was appalling what they served up to the Dragons fans yesterday.
What's your concern there?
Well, the decisions went so far the Roosters' way, and I'm not biased, of course, and we were robbed. You know, there were penalties galore, forward passes were called, the whole bit, 40% possession by first half. We were lucky to be holding on at 14-0. And, of course, Chris, they unveiled the greatest try ever known to mankind to Matt Duffy in the second half. Oh, I didn't see Cooper Cronk pulling something like that.
No.
I didn't see Latrell Mitchell pull something like that.
No.
I didn't see Tedesco pulling something like that.
I also saw Matt Duffy when the game was on the line, bringing the ball back and coughing it up.
Head?
Leading the Takiagos try to seal the match. So, rocks or diamonds, but are you saying that's the best try in history scored against, as described by your own coach, Mary McGregor, the best team ever in the world?
The best team in the world.
Yeah.
And if you can pull a try like that up against the best team in the world, it's got to be the best try ever.
Yeah, and you'll only lose 20-10 as opposed to, 20-4.
If that's the best team ever in the world, Chris, we're in big trouble.
And everywhere we go, we had 25,000 people in New York City. I asked them, are you fired up? And they were all fired up. And I asked them, are you ready to go? And they're all ready to go.
Chris, I think we can take this. We've had a few people text in about how to take this concept a little further, this life during wartime as a pantomime. Many people were taken by the suggestion that Hitler, or a replica of, not even an automaton or a 3D or, you know, what does the modern technology provide these days?
Animatronics?
Just a bloke.
Just an out-of-work actor. Because there's plenty of those.
Running in as Hitler. No, I did unfairly say he would be dressed in a Roosters jumper.
Well, I would have thought that it would reflect whose home game it was, wouldn't it?
That would be true. So whoever's playing away gets to dress up as Hitler, right?
Right.
Because he lost, right? Yeah. Okay, so, but I'm suggesting that we could have more fun. We could bring in more out-of-work actors, and wouldn't that be a great, Vivid exploration as well, to bring in the performing arts? We could have, one of the dragon jumper, Mussolini.
Sure.
You know, you could bring the Russians in somewhere.
But referees dressed as Stalin.
The referees.
Yeah, because they're always cracking down on something.
Always. And then, of course, the Japanese come in and create havoc, and then, of course, something gets slammed on them and they're just out of the picture. You know, I mean, the possibilities are endless, Chris.
I think introducing a historical education angle is a good idea, Stephen, because there were a couple of videos on that ear-splitting PA at the Sydney Cricket Ground yesterday, and it's so loud I couldn't focus.
Not at level four, it's not, Chris. Not at all. We were quite free. We heard the last pose.
Yeah, but I just think what we're saying here is three-dimensional. We can fatten up the experience.
Well, Pat was mentioning the Hamburglar. You might remember the Hamburglar from those ads, I think.
From the McDonald's ads?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That sort of characterisation. You know, funny, right. Benny Hill theme.
Right, so broad.
Yeah, so make it fun for the kids.
Yeah, broad.
Yeah.
If it's too po-faced, everybody switches off and they don't learn.
No,
you've got to reach out. It's got to be mass entertainment, Stephen.
Entertainment. I think Maurice understands that. Stuart definitely understands that.
Because as we keep hearing in rugby league, we are in the entertainment business, baby.
What else happened during the week, Chris?
We talk about stadia, Stephen. It seems we talk about a lot about stadia on this show. It was, of course, the unfurling of Bank West Stadium on Easter Monday, where the Parramatta Eels took on the West Tigers.
So this great edict about the West as the centre of Sydney now is starting to come to fruition.
Very much so.
The powerhouse may end up there. Parliament will probably move over there. I don't know.
Who's moving over there?
Parliament House.
Parliament House is moving?
I believe so.
Is that right?
There's a big plan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
The Opera House, look out. Now, who played their opening game?
Parramatta Eels and West Tigers.
Your team, West Tigers?
Correct.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
Were you going in with great hope?
it's in the, as everyone's pointing out, we're a quarter way through the season.
We
so
are.
If you're only a quarter way through the season, hope isn't completely extinguished.
No.
Yet.
No. That is the juice of rugby league.
That
hope.
Keeps you going there for a while. Yeah. So yeah, I refused to go to the game because it was not our home game, even though Bankwest Stadium is going to be our home.
It's not. Oh, right. So I'm confused. Your jungle or not your jungle?
Well, I don't know, but I mean, Mitchell Moses from the Parramatta Eels had something to say on
this. Okay.
You know, the Tigers are trying to say it's their home ground as well, but, you know, we wanted to stamp our authority on this field, and I think we did that tonight, and I don't think it's their jungle anymore.
Wow, not their jungle anymore.
Well, ever.
Ever.
Really.
Well, and that's right, you haven't been to that jungle before, have you?
Not yet. I think we've debut against the Canberra Raiders in about round 13, but we're playing four home games there. So Mitchell Moses is obviously still bitter about his departure from his true calling, which is the West Tigers.
Yes, yes. Like Tedesco, true calling Tigers. Yes. Don't start on the...
Aaron Woods, true calling.
True calling, yeah,
West
right.
Tigers.
Yeah.
But, Blake Austin,
so,
Josh Addo-Carr, but I'm not bitter.
No. And given the time of the year and our war analogies, we all remember, you know, of course, Colonel Kurtz from a famous film, Chris, played by Marlon Brando.
Apocalypse Now.
Apocalypse Now, where Marlon Brando, of course, went off his rocker. And I think, was he just hiding or was he just basically having a good time in a cave?
No, he was a jungle warlord, Stephen. He was a fair-dinkum jungle warlord.
Right, okay.
That's right.
And if we could use this Tresh's metaphor a little further, and the jungle that was the game played at Bankwest at Parramatta, which is between the Tigers and the Eels, who would have been said Brando in such a scene?
Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? Because, you know, I guess what we're tapping into here is that the Tigers, having got off the bus, hello Ivan Cleary, we've really pushed the jungle metaphor. So I guess we were hoping to set up this concept, which is very popular in rugby league, of your home ground being a fortress.
Yes.
And Colonel Kurtz was ensconced in his jungle fortress.
Fortress, yes.
Being the Tigers' home ground. Now, I suppose you'd look at Parramatta decided to wage a campaign against this.
Yes.
If you remember...
So Mitchell Moses would be...
The Martin Sheen character.
Martin Sheen, yeah, of course, yeah.
Private Willard or something his name was,
I
think.
Yeah.
Speaking of Willard, did you ever see that movie?
I did, The Rat.
The Rat, incredible.
Yeah, lovely, yeah.
The Michael Jackson, the theme song.
Of course, great song, yeah.
How many songs have been number ones that are about rats?
One.
Well, there was the Boomtown Rats, of course, had a number one song, but it wasn't
about
them,
rats.
Was it?
No.
And then I guess sending him up the river, Heart of Darkness style, he encounters on the way Lieutenant Colonel Kilgore.
Yes.
Played by Robert Duvall, very, very reminiscent of Brad Arthur.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I love the smell of cooked tiger in the
cooked
afternoon.
Cooked tiger in the afternoon on Anzac Day.
So he's got to Mitchell, get in the gunboat, go up the river that is Bankwest Stadium and see if you can unseat Colonel Kurtz.
Now, Colonel Kurtz, I would put it to you that perhaps Colonel Kurtz, the original sort of jungle warlord, could have been Benji Marshall.
Robbie Farah.
The two of them could have been together. One of them might have been a colonel, one might have been a sergeant. Cleary, your ex-coach, could have been the man too.
Yeah, but he's been weeded out. What about
weeded out?
The current coach, Madge McGuire, who...
He's perhaps too new to this, isn't he, to be the warlord type, would you say?
So you're thinking about the person who best encompasses the Tiger's spirit.
Oh, it's this jungle spirit.
Yeah, the jungle
spirit.
Because
there's a great painting, isn't there, in a past like out on Parramatta Road, with that whole sort of said thing with Benji Marshall's face on it, isn't there? And who would be this person, this warlord of the jungle?
That says that it's our jungle and nobody else's.
Who sang that?
Well, I think it was the Wiggles, wasn't it?
The Wiggle. A Wiggle.
Are you saying that Colonel Kurtz is Anthony Field, the Blue Wiggle?
Here? That's got a lot of rhythm, Chris, and a lot of melody. That is a superbly crafted piece of music, isn't it? Who did that music?
That was the Wiggles.
The Wiggles, West Tigers theme song from...
Well, was it Anthony Field with... Like, it was a spin-off. I'm not really sure. But I think what you're saying is that Mitchell Moses went up the river that was Bankwest Stadium and shot the Blue Wiggle.
Right, the Blue Wiggle's dead. He's gone. No.
The horror.
We've taken this metaphor too far now, Chris.
Very much so. Okay, get the war out of rugby league, Stephen, and should we change tack?
Can we bring it back to a prettier sight in rugby league? Can we bring it back to a man known as the Jabba the Hutt of rugby league?
Let's go.
Yeah, can we?
And now, it's time for the latest installment of The Life and Times of Gus Gould.
I used to collect pigeons. This is a true story. And the bloke at Blacktown was selling a pigeon called a silver mealy. I'll never forget this. It was a fortune. It was a dollar. We had to raise a dollar to go and buy this silver mealy. And the bloke said to us, you know, when you take him back to the cage, make sure you keep him in the cage for 3 months, all right, before you let him out. We said, why? He said, because he'll come back here and he'll bring all your birds with him. We said, right, well, we don't want that to happen. So we kept him in the cage for 6 months. We kept him locked up in the cage, the silver mealy. He used to strut around all day, every day. We'd feed him. So after 6 months, we thought, well, we're safe now. So we let him out with the other birds. And off they went. And they used to go round and round and round. And all of a sudden, the silver mealy took off on his own. And the other birds followed him. An hour later, the bloke at Blacktown rang up and said, oh, your birds are in my pigeon. We didn't go and get him.
That was the end of your pigeon career?
End of it, yeah. That was the end of it.
And that was the latest installment of The Life and Times of Gus Gould.
Anyway, we're all fired up. Let's go.
Oh, that was an incredible story, Gus. Incredible.
That was another installment of The Life and Times of Gus Gould.
I mean, we could bring in pigeons at this Anzac Day, but I think there might be some, you know, animal liberationists would be up in arms about the cruelty that could ensue if there were guns and bombs and parachutes and planes.
It wouldn't work with the Blackhawks or the
parachutes.
Helicopters
and pigeons, not a good mix.
No, not really.
Now, that man, the Buddha of suburbia, that image the other day of him sitting trying to text on the ground on the grass, so that painted an image.
Shark Park.
Shark Park.
Pointsbet_au stadium.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Only you could remember that, Chris.
They've abbreviated a PointsBet stadium, but it's not quite as catchy, I don't think.
Now, we're going to have to enlarge this segment because, I mean, the soap opera that is Gus Gould just got incredibly... It just blew up, didn't it, this week?
Well, since we've been following his life and times, I think our bright light that we've shone through our prism on Gus has opened up some thoughts out west at Penrith.
You're right.
And they've decided that he's redundant.
Right. So Penrith was his heartland, I suppose.
Yes.
Yes, and he had a 5-year plan.
Yes.
He'd been there how long?
8.
8 years. What were the things that he was hoping to achieve, and what were the ending indicators that he achieved these said things? Chris, if I could say to you, these KPIs would include junior development.
Yes, junior development. They've got a rich junior development going on out there now.
Tick.
Tick.
As you would expect, a green tick.
Yeah, though my concern about Penrith at the moment is that they don't seem to be able to tackle. So I think when your juniors are all playing touch and Oz tag,
you
might be going down the wrong pathway.
That is a problem. They need to relearn some skills, don't they?
You know, pathways are important in rugby league.
Financials, Chris. How are they standing?
I think the word solvent now. I think Gus himself said when he arrived, there were 11 well-meaning volunteers in paid jobs not knowing what they're doing.
Yes.
Now there are 58 highly qualified staff at Penrith.
I'm about to say staffing's good.
Yes, good. Yeah. You arrive early in the morning, they're there. You leave late at night and the lights are still on because they're still working.
Right.
Which
not
raises,
out of fear, are they, Chris?
No, well, that raises real issues about what the employment conditions are like out at Penrith. And this underbelly could be exposed very soon.
Is he getting out before these claims are made?
Well, that's right.
Yes. Strapped to the desk, you know, whipped every half an hour.
A little bit like James Sutherland with Cricket Australia.
Yeah. How about building facilities, Chris? How are they going out there?
Well,
it used to be the home of entertainment,
you've
right?
You've got the world of entertainment is Panthers, Aqua Golf, that sort of deal.
Can't dispute that.
Was it Reactor One, I think, is the nightclub there, if that's still going.
What a great name, with a K, I hope, too.
Yeah, yeah. The iFly, you know, you hop in the air thing and you get blown up. And imagine
have they got any replicas of
imagine you're parachuting into the SCG, for example.
Wow. Any replicas of any famous buildings, you know, like the Eiffel Tower or...
Las Vegas style.
Las Vegas style.
That would be in the plans, wouldn't it?
Plans, right,
you know, put the Bellagio in there, that sort of deal. But, of course, there is the forerunner of the Bellagio, which is the Penrith Rugby League Academy.
Academy.
State of the art.
State of the art, Centre of Excellence Academy.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's an achievement.
All ticks.
All ticks. What about, are they fostering talent, for example, like coaches? Are they looking after their coaches?
Very, very deep coaching talent. The ability to transition players like Peter Wallace from the playing ranks straight into the coaching.
Yes.
Cameron Seraldo, rugby league first grade
coach
in waiting.
And they're paying good money for coaches too?
They're paying continuous money for coaches.
In fact,
they've got a number of coaches on their books.
How many?
Well, they've got Ivan Cleary currently. They've got Anthony Griffin no longer coaching there. They're paying him. And they're still paying Ivan Cleary from when he coached there the first time.
Fantastic.
So they're paying him twice.
Well, that's great because, as we know, investment, like the flow of money into, like Kevin Rudd's toss, you know, when the crash happened, you've got to put money back into the economy, don't you?
Yes, you do.
Great. So because they spend. Cleary goes down to Kmart, spends some of that dough that's not so hard-earned.
On witches' hats and...
All sorts of
things, yeah.
What about aged care facilities, Chris?
Well, I believe they are. And this is something we touched on with Ian Heads last year, with that terrible dispute going on with the Waverley Bowling Club, where they're trying to relocate that and build a Roosters aged-themed aged care facility. Right. I believe there will be a Panthers aged care facility, and the residencies are selling fast. You know, they're sort of, you know, the Luz Ivanovic wing and Gary Petherbridge Library, the Bill Ashurst Fountain.
Wow.
You know, some of the great Penrith greats from the past. Yeah. You know, the Izzards.
The Izzards.
Will all be working there, I imagine.
Very attractive miss.
Sounds great,
so,
doesn't it?
So far, there's a lot of ticks going on here, Chris. Now, would I suggest to you, one of my indicators would be how many colours have they got in their team for their jerseys and their flags so the kiddies could actually colour in and have a greater, more difficult task, I should say. Have they added any more colours?
Teal.
Rust.
Pink.
Yeah.
The classic black.
Black.
White, brown, of course.
Brown.
The licorice all sorts.
Licorice all sorts.
Yeah. So
any
all the colours of the rainbow. They've basically appropriated every colour possible with the exception of maroon and blue.
Okay, so you've got to be satisfied with that.
Yes.
What about premierships, Chris?
Zero.
Zero. No premierships. But one great big tick, of course, is he turns boys into men.
Girl, I'm here for you. All those times at night when you just heard me and just ran out with that other fella. Baby, I knew about it. I just didn't care. You just don't understand how much I love you, do you? I'm here for you. I'm not out to go out there and cheat all night, just like you did, baby, but that's alright. I love you anyway. And I'm still gonna be here for you to my dying day, baby. Right now, I'm just in so much pain, baby, because you just won't come back to me, will you? Just come back to me. Yes, baby, my heart is lonely. My heart hurts, baby. Yes, I feel pain too. Baby, please.
Fight Up Anzac Day special. Chris Gale, myself, Stephen Ferris here on FBI. Is it the end of the road for said Jabba the Hutt, the Buddha of suburbia?
Well,
one
thing he's happy about is he's got a lot of less driving to do, because the shy to Penrith and back every day was, I think it was wearing on him.
I think it
was
wearing,
But is it the end of the road for Gus? Do we think that he's threatened to do more media, so, you know, it's not all good news.
Not all. And is the end of the road Shark Park, basically.
Pretty much.
Yeah, just up the road. Yeah, Okay, look, we know that with this war theme that Rugby League thrives on hate, Chris, not hope. Hate. How much do I hate the Roosters? A lot.
You hate the Roosters a lot. I mean, you were suggesting that the fix was in from the beginning, that the referees are in on it.
Totally, yeah.
Stalin and Hitler in some sort of unholy alliance.
I mean, gee whiz, talk about, as I said,
rewriting the rules of history.
Come on through, boys, come on through. 14-0, oh dear.
Did you enjoy the game, though?
Yeah, you know, there's some, you know, Hooray Henry's next to me who had made too much noise, you know, entitled mob.
Roosters fans.
Now, who would you say now, if we take the niceties off, who is the most hated man in rugby league? I'll throw a few names at you. You would, Mitchell Moses, you would put in that category right
now? Well, Redfern Pat absolutely despises the kid, particularly with the prospect that he might end up with a blue jersey at some stage. But look, I just think he was a guy that needed to grow up, and he's showing signs that he is, and I can't hate him for that. I can't hate him for leaving my club. I can't hate him for belting us 51-6. Can I?
Can you?
I probably can.
Well, it'll come off soon. Therapy soon, Chris, I think. Yeah. What about Darius Boyd? I mean, he's not so much hated as, like, really.
He's yesterday's hero, isn't he? Yeah. Or yesterday's anti-hero.
Yes.
I've lost my enmity for Darius. I wish him well in his hamstring in retirement.
And in the Broncos, you're being nice here. Jimmy the Jet, is he troubled or is he despised?
I tell you who hates him is Anthony Seibold.
Anthony Seibold hates him.
They're done. Yeah, I mean, Jimmy the Jet to Redfern rumours continue to grow, though Wayne Bennett says it's very quiet.
You don't trust that, do you?
But I tell you what, Seibold, I'm not sure about this guy. There was on the wires this week that he's reached out widely to get assistance with his coaching.
Wow. Would it Bellamy, maybe?
No, you're not
David
thinking,
Gallup, maybe?
You're not thinking laterally, Stephen. You're thinking league world. You're thinking clubland.
Yeah, I see. He went on an American trip and then spoke to somebody in another code over there.
No, the UK, Eddie Jones Rugby Union.
Rugby Union?
And then closer to home, Nathan Buckley from the Collingwood Magpies. And Seibold was
Sorry, who are they?
They're an AFL team.
Oh, AFL, right, okay.
And Seibold was quoting as saying, I love AFL. No wonder the Broncos are 1-5.
Man, he's gone.
He's gone.
He's just written his death sentence,
so
hasn't
Jimmy,
he?
Jimmy the Jet, probably more, not so much hated as, I think there's a lot of concern for Jimmy.
Right, concern, fair enough. Yeah, welfare style. Adam Blair.
No, I hate him.
Hate him. Yeah. There you go, straight off the bat.
Total cat.
What about the pairing? Because they come as a pair of Fifita and Dugan.
That's an interesting thing, isn't it? Individually, they're kind of in some way almost likable, but together they're loathsome. What about Fifita giving it to Josh Morris after Penrith went ahead 20-6? Yeah. It's in the Murdoch press today that him giving him a bit of a serve. Well, it worked.
Wow. they're the sort of the dark horse this year, aren't they? I think the Sharkies, they might come strong, you know, cause a few upsets over the...
Yeah, they're my spoiler. Stephen, can I say at the beginning of the season they were in my top four?
I would have to say Josh Maguire nearly tops the list for the most hated man in rugby league.
Most hated guy for me. For some reason this season now all the commentators are referring to him as Moose. I'd never heard him referred to as Moose.
That sounds too cute for me.
Yeah, he's got a rap sheet longer than your arm.
Yes.
And the gouge.
Yeah, the gouge.
The gouge. Yeah. They said there wasn't sufficient evidence.
What?
Yeah, it's just simply because Cameron Smith, for his own nefarious reasons, wouldn't want to press charges.
Well, now we're talking.
He knows the Cowboys are worse with Maguire in the team, so he doesn't want to see him rubbed out.
Of course not.
Even though he tried to rub out Munster's eyes.
But there was a slow-mo. Those fingernails just digging deeper and deeper, weren't there?
It seemed like...
Looking for the root, the nerve.
It seemed like...
Pull.
It seemed like incontrovertible evidence to me.
And, of course, you can't go back to Cameron Smith. I mean, he's the devil not even in disguise anymore, is he?
He's the Prince of Darkness.
Prince of Darkness.
Absolutely no doubt. And, again, you know, with the Warriors set to have a famous historic victory, give the Kiwis something on Anzac Day, and there's that penalty for, you know, holding in the tackle against Pasilio, whatever his name is. Sorry to get that wrong. And who was involved at dummy half, at acting half? Cameron Smith.
Now, Chris, look, we are a scratch record. We've been doing this now for, I don't know, 13 or 14 years, haven't we?
I have, yes.
And there's some things never change in rugby league and shouldn't change, really. The slow the ball tactics around the play the ball. For those that are listening that don't like rugby league, don't even know what rugby league is, but quite like the show, or will put up with us.
Yes.
When you tackle a player, the player has a certain amount of time to get up, and the referee's discretion says that's too long. And they blow a penalty or they don't.
Correct.
Some teams seem to be better at that art. It's a dark art, Chris. And who is the finest exponent of that dark art?
Well, the Melbourne Storms.
Craig Bellamy and the Melbourne Storms. And anybody who's trained under Craig Bellamy has learned that trick. Now, of course, I lay a charge against South Sydney courtesy of Seibold before he left.
Right.
Okay. But the Bulldogs have been copying it.
Yes.
Why?
Because they're awful.
They're awful.
They're no good.
They're just slow and stupid, Chris.
Yeah, so as their own coach, Dean Pay, has described it, we are prepared to play ugly football, and they are daring the referees to blow a penalty. And for whatever reason, Good Friday, meant to be, you know, it's a time of reflection.
Yes.
The referees were reflecting on grander matters and put the whistle in the pocket, and Wayne Bennett, not happy.
Blew up.
Yeah,
right.
Well, was blowing up about the fact they weren't blowing.
So non-compliance.
Non-compliance.
Non-compliance. Okay, we hate non-compliance. Hate that. You know,
he described the modern player as the least compliant he's ever seen them.
The least compliant.
And
ever.
I don't think he's talking about football.
So jaywalking?
Yeah.
Driving cars unregistered?
Not getting their...
No licences?
Not getting on the electoral roll.
Wow. That non-compliant.
Refusing to obey traffic signals.
Jesus,
doing
Chris.
45 in a school zone between 8 and 9:30 in the morning.
Cannot function like that. And Wayne's right. He used to be a cop, didn't he?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rugby league is full of ex-policemen, except for you and me.
That's right.
Excellent. We've been known to be non-compliant occasionally.
Well, I do notice it's on 10 o'clock, Stephen, so what are we going to do now?
Trying to go.
We're going to go because we're compliant.
Yeah, let's leave it on a fun note, shall we?
Well, why not?
Everybody out there in FBI land, it's just been claimed by Paul Kent, who's the funniest man in rugby league. And if anybody should know, Newcastle is the newly crowned party town.
It's the party capital of the NRL.
Yes.
Apparently, rather than focus on their Raiders game, which they went on to lose 17-10 a few weeks ago, all the talk in the Knights compound in the joint, where Nathan Brown has clearly lost control, was getting ready for Mitchell Pearce's 30th birthday party.
Right, that's it.
And they combined it with Kalen Ponga's.
Wow, and what, clowns?
The whole bit.
Dancing
face
girls,
painting.
Face painting.
Pinball machines. Yeah. You know. Hand puppets.
Wow, hand puppets too.
I'm sure. A video room,
I'm sure
so
they,
to speak.
They wheeled in the Eskies and the casks and the goon sacks and all that sort of stuff.
David Clemmer comes to the Knights and the whole joint just goes to pot.
Right, with hair, big shoes,
that's
red
right.
nose, big wig.
People dressed up as Bozo the Clown, i.e. Bobby Fulton.
And once again, Nathan Brown was trying to bloody scratch his hair, but there was none left. You
that's
know?
Right.
Damn, what am I going to do with this lot? But look,
well, he's got a contract that says he just needs 4 weeks' notice, so yes. I think he'll be getting it.
Have they got lockout laws up there?
No, that's the beauty of the joint. We should all move to Newcastle.
On that note, we'll see you next week, Chris.
Bye for now.
So tune in again next week when we invite a veritable breadline of nobodies and wannabes to flesh out another rip-snorting round of rugby league shenanigans, slander and smut right here at the home of radio's most fatuous footy confab. Fire!